Hello and welcome to Anna With Two Ends, episode number 56. On today's episode, I bring you another conversation with someone I met on Instagram, a fellow teacher. He's got a fantastic profile and I really wanted to speak to him about his area of expertise, which is pronunciation. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Also, his personal story and background is really interesting. He's living on the other side of the world and has experienced a very different culture to what me and maybe you have ever experienced. So stay tuned for that. And we also talk about lots of other things, our values as teachers and some of the common frustrations for students. So you're going to love this episode. There's a lot of fantastic listening practice in here. Remember, the reason that I do the conversations is partly so you don't have to listen to me all the time. And also, so you can practice with a variety of different accents, but not only accents, people, okay? Different people speaking, so that you have a variety of exposure to how people say things. Not everybody talks like me, which is probably a good thing. So that's one of the reasons why I do a chat with. So I want you to listen closely to this conversation. Remember, this is not going to go anywhere. You can come back to it. You can stop it. You can listen to it again. I would recommend that you turn the volume up. This is a recording through Zoom. Unfortunately, I couldn't go and do a face-to-face interview. I would have loved to, but you know, they live in Asia. So the recording, the sound quality on Zoom just means that you need to just turn it up a little bit. And I would recommend low background noise for this one as well. So without any further ado, let's move on and hear from my guests today. Oh, and obviously not forgetting some nice little samba music, please. Welcome, Ollie. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I've been wanting to get somebody, I don't want to ruin your introduction, actually. But I've been wanting to get you on the show because you specialize in an area that I think a lot of students are really, really interested in. So I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself and tell the listeners a little bit more about what you do and also where you are, because you're actually in a place that probably a lot of people have never been or have ever been on holiday there or probably will ever go. So tell us a little bit about you, Ollie.
Sure thing. Well, firstly, thanks so much for inviting me. So my name is Ollie, as you mentioned. I kind of focus on pronunciation, fluency. Those are the areas that I really enjoy teaching, and I'm from a small countryside village in the UK, quite close to Cambridge, so I speak with a British southern kind of modern received pronunciation accent. And at the moment, and where I have been living for about 4.5 years, is Vietnam. And I think this the language here, so the Vietnamese language, has been part of the reason why I got into pronunciation and started finding it so interesting, because it has a very big initial hurdle, like a wall to get over if you're trying to study the language. With lots of languages, you can quickly pick up phrases and be understood, and you can understand other people. But with Vietnamese, it's a tonal language. So there's 6 different tones in the north, which is the accent that I studied. And that means if you walk into a restaurant or you walk into a bar and you ask for something, you just get a blank stare because you didn't get the tones right. Because to begin with, you can't actually hear the tones. They're not within the range of sounds that you can detect if you don't have tones in your own language. So that got me interested in the sounds, and trying to figure that out became something I got quite quite obsessed with and found very interesting.
Yeah, wow. I mean, geez, I struggle with Spanish, but that sounds Vietnamese sounds like a different ball game. Now, before you came on, you were actually just telling me that you're in Hanoi, right? Which is the capital of
yes,
Vietnam.
Correct.
And you were just telling me that it's four. So here in Spain right now, when I'm recording, it's 11:15 in the morning. And in Hanoi, it's 4 p.m., right?
Yeah.
And you were just telling me something very, a cultural thing that's very interesting about what people do at this time in Vietnam. Or is it in Hanoi, or is it a Vietnamese thing?
I think, to be honest, I don't know. But I think, it's definitely a Hanoi thing. but it may also be a Vietnamese thing. Yeah, it's a small thing. Like, it's at this time of day, locals tend to go for a walk. It's kind of... So one of the big cultural differences in terms of the way locals here structure their day, it tends to be very early mornings. So waking up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and then taking it easy, resting in the middle of the day because it gets so hot, you know, so you don't get much done when it's that hot. And I know that's the same for quite a few European countries where you take a rest in the middle of the day.
I was going to say there's some crossover here with the Spanish siesta. And there's a kind of a myth about the siesta, though, because a lot of people, British people, not really knowing much about the Spanish culture, I think a lot of people still think that Spanish people have siestas during the day, which is not really the case. I mean, most people have 9-to-5s, like they can't just take a nap when they're at work. Do the Vietnamese have like a name for it? Do they have a name for this like rest period in the afternoon?
Yeah, they definitely do. And I can't remember it right now. My Vietnamese vocabulary is pretty rusty. I haven't studied the like vocab for a while. Like pronunciation, you can kind of get to a level where you can be understood and there's either right or wrong. Like there's no in between. So, but with the vocab, I haven't kept it up well enough to remember words that specific, but there definitely is a word for it. I just can't remember. Yeah.
How long have you been living there in Vietnam?
Like 4.5 years-ish.
4.5 years. And I guess a lot of people will be thinking, listening to this, why Vietnam? Because I've heard a lot of amazing things about Vietnam, about the people and about the culture, a lot of people that have traveled there, but I don't know many people that live there. A lot of people have traveled in Asia that I know, and they've moved around, they spent a few months, but not a lot of people I know live in Vietnam, or maybe that I've met. Why Vietnam? Why Hanoi? Why did you choose to move there?
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a particularly big reason for me choosing Vietnam over another country, but I realized that I wanted to experience another culture, a culture that was quite different, and kind of fully experience it. So live in a country that I wasn't familiar with the culture. And I felt that Hanoi was a little bit more traditional than Ho Chi Minh City in the south, or it used to be called Saigon, still is called Saigon by a lot of locals there. And I knew one person here at that time as well. Mm-hmm. So that kind of swung it for me.
To swing something is like to influence you. It's like the final, it's like to influence something, right? To swing one way or another. It's like to make a decision or one way or another. I remember the only place I've been in Asia is Beijing. So I've only been to the city. I haven't been anywhere else in China or anywhere else in Asia, in fact. And I remember going and it was quite a culture shock, I have to say. Like when I arrived there, it wasn't what I expected. It was very different. I mean, in Spain and the UK, there's quite a lot of cultural crossover. The food is generally kind of similar. Well, probably Spanish people are going to be very offended if I say that, but you know, it doesn't feel like such a shock as I imagine moving to somewhere like Vietnam. So what's it like being a specifically a British person as well. I'm going to kind of group that. Being a British person in Vietnam, what's that like?
Well, I mean, it's very different now to how it was when I first arrived. And a lot of, there are quite a few British expats, so people who live here from Britain. But when I first arrived, I was also coming straight from like English countryside, very quiet, you know, birds, you know, waking you up, to complete like sensory overload. So by that, I mean like my senses, you know, so many new noises, so many new smells, very, very hot, humid, extremely humid. So you kind of walk outside for 5 minutes and then you're sweating all over. And then there's like bike horns, so many bike horns, because it's not the same, you know, you don't beep your horn here to indicate that someone's doing something wrong. You just, it's just kind of automatic. So you just hear bike horns all the time. It's just like, excuse me, hello, hello, hello. You know, it doesn't really, it's not rude. So, you know, you just kind of ignore it. Yeah, so sensory overload, lots going on. And then you get used to it after a while. But yeah, definitely it's a big culture shock. And there's a lot that's different and a lot to get used to. Yeah, it's a process.
Yeah, I can't.
It's an enjoyable one. Yeah, it can be enjoyable. It depends. It depends how you view it, really.
What do you mean by it depends how you view it? Like, it depends what type of person you are, or your personality, or your mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it depends. All of those things. So, I've worked with lots of different people and have lots of different friends, colleagues here who all have different experiences when it comes to moving to a place with a completely new culture. Some people like to just fully commit and get involved with everything, try new food. Other people prefer to kind of ease themselves into it. So maybe have like some Western food, burgers and pizza, stuff like that. And then a bit of local food and then a bit of, you know, so it's gradually rather than just completely going for it.
Yeah.
So it depends what you like. And then some people will, you know, complain about everything, and some people will be like, oh, I find it really interesting. So, you know, it depends.
which group are you in? Are you in the, I imagine you're not in the complaining group because you're still there. So I imagine you're in the other group, right? Like going at it 100%, trying to like explore everything and experience new things. I guess you're in that group, right? I assume.
Yeah,
or somewhere in the middle?
Yeah. I think I'm in that group now, but I think I've learned, you know, a lot being here, and you gradually have to, like, if you do complain and you plan to stay somewhere for a long time, then that's not a very fun way to live. So you just kind of have to get used to it and then find the kind of curious, interesting parts of it and see the beauty in it. And, that's, in my opinion, that's a much more pleasant way of living in a new city, a new country.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree. I think I'm kind of, it's less of a, because it's less of a culture shock coming to somewhere like Spain. I think it's easier to kind of start to live your life quite normally, kind of apart from the language barriers and a couple of cultural things. It feels relatively normal, you know, you don't feel like you're out of your depth or anything like that. Do you think that, sorry, let me make sense there, because that wasn't a very good one thing that I always find interesting. I don't know how much Vietnamese you speak. Do you speak a lot of Vietnamese? I guess you must communicate in it day to day.
Yeah, it's very easy to not, because a lot of Vietnamese people are learning English. And depending on where you live as well. So if you're in the countryside, whenever I go to the countryside, on holiday or just away for the weekend, then you do have to speak more Vietnamese. But in the cities, there tends to be a lot of English. So you, if you want to learn Vietnamese, you kind of have to make yourself learn Vietnamese. So I do try and speak as much as possible. I would say, yeah, I have enough Vietnamese to be able to have a sort of comfortable basic conversation with a local, with a taxi driver, like negotiate a new apartment, moving to a new apartment with a landlord. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting, because actually in Spain as well, it is possible. I mean, I wouldn't say that English is massively used in Spain day to day, but you could make your way around Madrid, for example, in the capital city, without speaking really any Spanish. A lot of young people know a lot of English, so it's quite easy to kind of move around. But one thing I've noticed about some people who speak two languages, or people who live in different countries, do you feel like you have a second Vietnamese personality, like a Vietnamese side and then a British side? Because for me, it's very interesting, because I see myself when I speak English and when I speak Spanish, and it is kind of like a different side of my personality. It doesn't feel like it's exactly the same person, because you can't express yourself in exactly the same way in the other language. There's different vocab, and I imagine in Vietnamese there's a huge difference in the way, maybe not, I don't know, that you can express yourself. Yeah. Do you find that?
Yeah, I definitely find that I feel different when I'm speaking Vietnamese, and I worked on trying to kind of, certainly with a lot of phrases that I use, try and use them spontaneously rather than translating in my head. And just tried to make that into a habit by constantly, you know, trying to come out with them as quickly as possible. And I do find that, yes, I feel different. Also, in the Vietnamese language, is when it's spoken by men, culturally, it's spoken very loud. It's kind of like a cultural thing that men should speak the language loudly. And I don't tend to speak very loud. So I guess when a Vietnamese person is listening to me, immediately they're like, okay, well, this is strange. It's also interesting that there's not really many foreigners who speak Vietnamese. So when locals are listening to Vietnamese spoken by a non-native, it's very difficult for them to try and understand, because they're used to hearing Vietnamese spoken perfectly, in a way, you know, right, fluently at least. So there's some confusion there, which is me coming back to saying, like, either you get it right or they don't understand.
So yeah, it's not like you can kind of, you know, say it and they would kind of understand. It's like, no, it's black. It's very black and white in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. You can get away with it more in English. There's so many different ways to pronounce certain things, and it's okay. A lot of the time it's okay if you're being understood, and that's what you want to get out of that conversation, is to be understood and for them to get your meaning. That's okay. But if you kind of change a tone slightly, there can be a big communication breakdown in Vietnamese. Wow. Yes,
that's fascinating. Yeah, it's fascinating. Coming back to, you know, what your expertise is and your, you know, kind of passion, which is pronunciation. And I think a lot of people listening, a lot of my students, a lot of my listeners are very focused on pronunciation. It's also something that I feel, speaking another language as well, it can be quite an embarrassing thing if you feel that you can't pronounce very well. And I think it stops people from expressing themselves because they're worried about how they sound. What's the biggest thing that you see from your students and the people that you work with? What's the biggest problem or the biggest worry that students have around pronunciation?
Yeah, I think probably a similar thing to what you experience is, and what I've experienced speaking another language as well, is that fear that people are going to think maybe that you're stupid if you can't speak the language fluently, or if you make lots of mistakes. So you end up second guessing yourself, or maybe even not speaking up in the first place. And I think when it comes to what I like to focus on with my students, that's a very big part of it, addressing that, you know, how you talk to yourself afterwards. So if you made a mistake, what are you then saying to yourself about that mistake? You know, are you saying, oh, I'm so stupid, I always make mistakes when I speak English, they obviously think I'm stupid? Or are you saying to yourself, wow, I'm so proud that I spoke up in that meeting and they really enjoyed what I was saying. Yes, I made a mistake or two, but that doesn't take away from what the message that I was giving. It was just a silly mistake. That doesn't matter. I'm focusing on, I spoke up, I communicated my message. And I think just how you talk to yourself is really important. And it can really help with your confidence long term.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And I myself have tried recently, one of my things that I'm trying to do less of is be very self-critical, because my voice in my head can sometimes be like, that was stupid. Why did you do that? When I'm speaking in Spanish, I mean, why did you do that? You should have done this. You should have done that. Kind of all regrets about what I should have done. And it's like, well, look, it's over. It's done. You were fine. Nobody died. You were able to communicate your message, as you said. So I think that voice in your head, as you said, is so important. And I say this quite a lot, but I've never seen people be as negative about themselves. Well, maybe in some other context, but with languages, absolutely. People tend to be very self-critical, especially, as you said, with things like in when they're at work. And they feel under more pressure because they're here in a space where they need to show authority, they need to show expertise, and maybe this is like an area of their vulnerability. Coming back to like, because this, my podcast, a lot of my listeners are Spanish speakers, and there's definitely some specific things that a lot of my students, a lot of common mistakes of pronunciation that Spanish people make. And I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about what some of the key things are that affect Spanish speakers and their pronunciation. So I thought we could share a little bit of that now and chat a little bit about that and maybe talk about how they could try and improve some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one quite key difference between English and Spanish is the consonant clusters that come at the end of words. So for example, so a consonant cluster is when you have like two or three consonants in a row, consonant sounds in a row without a vowel in between. And in English, we tend to have more together than you would find in Spanish. So for example, at the end of the word, even just a couple of consonants, so like at the end of the word six, six has a k, six, so it has a consonant cluster of two ks, whereas that doesn't happen in Spanish. It's usually just one consonant, so you'd probably be likely to say six, rather than, and that example maybe isn't the best because I can still understand what you're saying. But if you took an example like worked with the past tense, so I worked at my old job, I worked, that kt is a consonant cluster. So instead of hearing that, you might hear like worked.
Exactly.
With the ed, so there's no consonant cluster, it's a vowel, then a consonant, ed, worked.
Mm-hmm. That's a super common one. That's a one that especially around kind of, I find that common mistake around the kind of higher beginner, lower intermediate level, when they're kind of getting, they're learning all about the past tense. And it's Spanish people want to look at all the syllables because they want to break it down, because Spanish is phonetic. So they want to look at all the little syllables and put it together like that, which means that sometimes what it ends up with, it doesn't sound like this consonant cluster you're talking about. And that's a super common one, that people add that extra syllable. So it sounds like worked or liked, Like the verb liked is also a very common one.
Yeah, so what you can do to work on that by yourself is to find words that have consonant clusters at the end. Next is like another example where you have a few consonants in a row that come at the end of the word, and just really slow it down. Try and sound out each consonant sound. And then when you're comfortable with each one, try and gradually speed up and bring them together, and then practice it. And then what will likely happen is, and I'm sure you've experienced it when and with your students, and like when you've really worked on a sound or a word, and then as soon as it's back in speech, it's gone, and it's back to the old familiar, comfortable pronunciation habits.
Right.
Because it's easy, you know, our mouth does whatever is easiest. So it's a case of not talking to yourself critically, thinking, oh, I had it and now it's gone, because that's just going to happen, because it's no longer conscious. When you're talking in a sentence again, and you're talking just chatting, you're no longer aware of that, so you're just doing what you're familiar with. So you have to gradually build up to it. So do it at a sound level, and then focus on the words, and then in phrases, and then in sentences, and then, you know, gradually that turns it into a habit, and then you won't have to think about it. But you can also spend time when you're, say, you're practicing some like recording yourself, practice consciously using it. So okay, I'm thinking about using the consonants and not putting an extra vowel, or you know, not breaking them up, and practicing using them together. So that's what you can do as like a tip. Yeah,
I was going to ask you about recording, and you just mentioned it there, because that's something that I do with my students on the course. Well, they do it as part of a presentation, which is recorded, and then they watch their presentation back, which a lot of them find horrendous, which I understand. Nobody is very uncomfortable to listen to yourself sometimes. Well, I have a podcast and I even find it uncomfortable, so I have to listen to myself. I'm used to it. But a lot of people have never really heard themselves speak, and even definitely haven't heard themselves speak English. I don't know if you find this, but one thing I find is when I correct students for pronunciation, they're like, yeah, but I said it like that. And I'm like, but you didn't. So let's try it. If you record it, and sometimes when they record it and they hear themselves, they're like, ah, yeah, I see what you mean. And sometimes it takes that them listening to themselves in a recording, and they're like, ah, okay, I can see the mistake now. It doesn't sound quite right. It's like people don't always hear the mistake as they're saying it, obviously, because I don't know why, but sometimes students find it difficult to hear their mistakes. I don't know if you found that, but that's something I've seen my students.
Totally, yeah. It's really interesting, actually. And it might seem like a small thing to record yourself, but actually it's really powerful, because what happens is you might hear certain sounds, and the way that you kind of process them is through that voice in your head, but that voice in your head has the sounds that you know and you're familiar with. So you hear the sounds with the familiar structures that you're used to. So you actually quite often might hear the words differently to how they're being said to you. And then sometimes, again, you might try and say them and they're even more different to what you hear in your head. So basically what I'm saying is, like, the awareness is really important. So the more you can focus on that and being like, oh, there is a difference there, and realizing that once you've noticed that there's a difference, even if you think there isn't one, there might be one. So if you really try and listen for it, especially if, you know, a teacher's telling you that there is a difference, then you can really kind of celebrate that you've found it, and then you know what to work on, because there's this new difference that you didn't realize was there, and now you get to focus on that, and that's going to help your clarity speaking English moving forward.
Yeah, and I think being aware, that's the first step, right? I mean, you have to know you're making a mistake. Mm-hmm. You're not going to know you're making a mistake unless you have a teacher, or perhaps a native speaker friend, or a non-native speaker who can guide you. You're not going to know necessarily what you're what your mistakes are. And I mean, I've had it where I've been, I don't know, in a shop in Spain, and I've asked for something simple like a coffee with milk, which is café con leche. And I'm like, I said it perfectly, but they don't understand me. And one of the problems is that I don't vocalize as much, because in English, we don't really move our mouths when we speak, especially with my accent, which is similar-ish to yours, like a Southern accent. We don't really tend to move our mouths. So I kind of speak from here at the back of my mouth. I'm like, café con leche. And they're like, what? And I'm like, how did you not understand me? Like, it's the most simple thing. It's clearly café con leche. But it's also something about, especially for Spanish people, they use the mouth, the sounds come from the mouth here. Whereas British people, I think, we tend to speak like from the back of our throats. So we don't really move our mouths very much. So that can also affect how people understand you in clarity.
Yeah, I think, especially with British speakers, with most accents in Britain, it's the schwa is what we default to, that schwa sound, which is just a which is very lazy sound, because it's easy to say, and obviously your mouth is not very open when you're saying that sound, so we tend to use as little effort as possible when speaking.
It's actually a really ugly
probably
sound.
Comes across.
It's a really ugly sound, that schwa sound. It's like, ugh, it's like, it's really ugly. And yeah, like you said, it's kind of lazy as well. One thing I also wanted to touch on is I really like on your Instagram, you have, you can, what's your Instagram name for anyone that wants to find you?
Yeah, it's ESL. So like English as a second language, ESL. And then Cosmos, COS, MOS.
Perfect. I'm going to put it in the description, guys. So if you want to check Ollie out, everything will be there in the description of the episode. Now you, on your Instagram, you put some really nice things on there. You put some nice quotes on there, which I really like, about kind of progress. And for example, I'm going to read one that you put here, which is, stop telling yourself your progress is too slow. Slow compared to who? And that idea of stop comparing yourself to other people, learning languages, because it's just really the most futile, pointless thing that you could really do. And it's very damaging for the way that you see yourself. And it kind of, if you keep comparing yourself, you're going to be more critical. If you see somebody that's like fluent in English or whatever, or I don't even know, fluent, I say in speech marks. I mean, it's not, you know. Is that something, do you feel that those messages are important, or do you know what I mean? I think there's a lot of teachers that try and get people to think, learning English is very easy. The quick way to learn English, the easiest way to learn English. And I really and I really like these messages, which are kind of putting it in a realistic perspective. It's not something that you're going to achieve in a very short period of time. Do you find that your students are on board with that? Do you think that a lot of students expect to be fluent very quickly?
I think when I start working with people, I really tend to focus on that and really focus on goal setting and being realistic. Because I think a lot of companies and a lot of people who are promoting their English will try and make you feel like you're not doing it right. There's like a hack, there's a fast way to do it. And it makes you feel like you're missing out on something and maybe that you're not good enough. If someone else can learn English and be fluent in 3 months, then why can't I? And I think it gets you maybe coming back to your point that you made about comparing yourself to other people. It's not a fair thing to do, because like the only person you can fairly compare yourself to is a previous version of yourself, because there's too many other things that come in. If I'm comparing myself to someone else, I don't know anything about their background, what's happened, like their abilities in certain areas, the way they learn, and it's just yeah, if you start doing that, then it's really kind of not helpful to you in any way to be like, oh, their English is so good.
Absolutely.
And mine's so bad. Or, yeah, you know, it's actually, if you look at yourself and you say, oh, well, my English this time a year ago was here and now I'm here. Wow, I've come so far. Or if I haven't, then why haven't I? Maybe I haven't been doing it consistently enough. And then it's still important not to be like, oh, you know, I haven't progressed anywhere in a year. So, yeah, I think just comparing yourself to you is the goal. And it's very easy not to do that on like social media and stuff where you constantly see, you know, these beautiful, perfect images of people and, yeah.
Yeah, like fluent in 3 months or C1 in 2 weeks, or I don't know. It's these kind of messages that are just so unattainable and unrealistic. One thing, but very catchy, and people like that because they're like, oh, that looks great, like a quick fix, like fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it's really, at the end of the day, it's just not realistic. One thing that kind of makes me laugh is, before I moved abroad to another country and learned another language, because I didn't speak any Spanish before I came here, if I looked at my case, so I've been here for 3 years and I speak good Spanish, but it's not perfect. It's nowhere near perfect. And mm-hmm. I would be like, but you've lived in Spain for 3 years, so why aren't you fluent? And I think there's this mm-hmm. big judgment about people that live abroad. And sometimes I feel kind of nervous to tell my friends, my British friends, that I, you know, that I've lived here, or because I don't want them to be like, oh, well, do you speak fluent Spanish? And I'll be like, well, not quite. I speak good Spanish, but not fluent. And they're like, but you've been there for 3 years. So what have you been, what have you been doing? And honestly, if I told myself maybe 3 years ago when I moved here that I wouldn't be fluent, I mean, I'm saying fluent here, meaning an advanced level, in 3 years, I'd probably be like, oh my God, what have you been doing? Have you just been sitting on your ass all day doing nothing? And I don't know. I think there's just a lot of pressure on people to feel like they have to advance in languages very fast. And I just don't think people enjoy the journey enough. Like, I hate saying journey, but, you know, people don't enjoy the process. They're just fixated on this idea of being advanced, or like being a C1, which I understand, but I think it misses a lot in between, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. And I also think there's absolutely no need to like take on that pressure from those people saying, why aren't you this level? Why aren't you that level? You know, it's totally up to you what you do with your time. And I think there's this disbelief, misbelief that if you're living in another country where they speak a language, that you automatically learn that language just by being there, which is just not the case. Like, you still have to put in just as much time and effort as, you know, especially at the moment with everything being online.
With COVID, I mean,
If you want to learn a language, you don't have to be in another country to learn that language. You can just I actually started learning Spanish myself about 2 weeks ago. So I'm a baby when it comes to Spanish. But I'm enjoying it, and I have absolutely zero expectations for kind of where I am in 3 years. Like, if I'm fluent, cool. If I'm not, cool. Like I'm doing it because I'm enjoying it and I find it fun. And I've always wanted to learn Spanish. So,
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sure it's a fabulous language. I really enjoy it because I love the way that Spanish sounds. Like, it's interesting because for Spanish people, a lot of my students say, oh, I love English. I love the way English sounds. It sounds really nice. And I'm like, oh, I think Spanish sounds way better than English. Like, English is very, I don't know, Spanish is just very lovely and it flows and, you know, it has all the, it's phonetic and it just has it's just a different type of language to English. But a lot of my students actually think the opposite. They think that English is a very pretty language. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably just whatever language you don't have.
Yeah, exactly. Better. The grass is greener.
Exactly. The grass is greener. Well, I'm going to ask you a couple more things before we finish. One thing that I know is one of your passions, I think, is music and songs. And because I saw you post a little bit about this on Instagram. And one question I get asked a lot is about music, songs, and learning English. Now, one of my view about it, and maybe this is a personal view because I don't really use songs to learn another language. Like, it hasn't really helped me. It's just not a way that I do it. I like music, but it just doesn't, it's just not a way that I tend to do it. Do you think that it's a good way to learn English through songs and lyrics, for example?
I think the key thing that you mentioned there is that it didn't work for you. So I think basically the fastest way to progress in any language is finding what works for you and what you enjoy doing. So if you love listening to music, then I definitely think it can be good to listen to music in English. There's often very, I mean, it definitely depends on the music. Sometimes it's very difficult to understand lyrics, if not impossible.
Even for native speakers. Like, sometimes listening to a song and I'm like, I have literally no idea what that person's... Because they use lots of funny phrases and slang and stuff that people don't really actually say, or they play on words. And grammatically, some of the songs are not good because they're not writing it to be grammatically correct. They're writing it so that it sounds good. So sometimes I think, well, I hope my students never listen to this song because it's literally like, it's a disaster in terms of grammar and vocab. But you're right. Just depends if you like it. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. And that's fair enough. Mm. Yeah. And if you don't feel like it's working as well, then that's going to be another reason that you kind of think, oh, well, no, I definitely don't want to use the music. But I think another area where it can be helpful is with the rhythm of English. If the rhythm is something that you maybe need to work on or you find difficult, one good thing about music is that the words that are key are stressed. So listening for those key words is a good transferable skill to your listening. So like when you're listening for the keywords in the songs, that's also a good skill to transfer to your listening. Because in English, it's a stress-timed language. So we stress the words that we want you to hear. Mm. And then all the others tend to be reduced in some way. So music is quite a good example of that.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's a good point. I've never thought about that before, about the rhythm of the language. I subscribe to something. I'm not going to say the name of it, but I subscribe to something that has, one of the difficult things about Spanish, you're going to find this, Ollie, is the verbs. Mm-hmm. Okay, the verbs are just a crazy, crazy world out there with Spanish verbs. They basically have 9 versions of the verb depending on, it's just crazy. So I signed up to something which has like a, it's like a song. So it plays the endings of the verb, but in like a rhythm with a specific tune. And I thought, oh, this could be a really good way to practice the verb with a catchy song and help me learn the endings of the verb. But actually in the end, it kind of just felt like a bit of a torture method because it was like stuck in my head. So I was like, in the end, I thought I'd try it, do a bit of an experiment. But in the end, I only listened to it for about a week. And then I was like, I think I'm going to kill myself because it was like this music stuck in my head all day. And I was like, no, I don't think this is going to work. But it's an interesting technique, actually, for something like Spanish, where you need to have you need to remember the endings, the sound of the endings of the verbs, which is very difficult for English speakers. It could be a useful way to do it. Luckily in English, you don't have to learn as many versions of the verb. So it's in that way, from a Spanish speaker to English is a little bit easier, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You'll find all of that out, Ollie, as you go along. The subjunctive, the past tense, the two past tenses, the two verbs of the verb to be. Well, Ollie, to finish up, I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all my guests, which is about their favorite teachers. Well, their favorite teacher and also their worst teacher. So let's start with the worst teacher, because we'll start on a high note rather than a low note. Who's one of your favorite teachers or your best teacher in your life so far?
Best teacher.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to clarify. Well, it was definitely my English teacher at school when I was about 16, I think. Yeah, he was just had a very good way at making you feel relaxed in class. And I think that really helped me learn and motivated me to, you know, try hard, because I felt like I had a good relationship with him as a teacher. And I was like, well, I don't want to let him down by getting bad marks. yeah, and he was just very kind of motivating, and you really feel like he cared about, you know, your life. So yeah.
Cool. Actually, I'm sorry, I did it the wrong way around. It should have been worst teacher, best teacher, but it doesn't matter. We'll end on a low note. We'll end on a low note. and what about your worst teacher, or not as good as that teacher? Because worst teacher sounds very bad, I know, but.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, actually, because no one.
That's a good sign.
To mind, to like, obviously. It. Yeah, I think it was probably actually. And now this is giving away a bit more information about my Spanish learning, but I think it was, I had about a year of Spanish in school, and I wasn't very convinced by their teaching style. And I found it, yeah, quite boring and not very motivating. And it didn't make me want to continue learning Spanish or any languages. I felt like I was really not good at languages. And then I didn't realize that actually was not true. That's just a belief that I had taken on, because you can be good at languages. You can, you just have to practice. And I think thinking, oh, just because a teacher told me, or just because I didn't get good grades at school, that definitely doesn't mean that you're not good. And
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Teachers have a big impact. Anybody that starts to guide you or mentor you in any way, they have a really big impact on the way that you decide to take that area, or what you decide to do with that area. They, I think, a lot bigger than people realize, or even teachers realize. Like, when I'm teaching, I don't think, oh, I'm making an impact. Like, that sounds really, I don't think that. And I'm sure you don't feel like that. You just do it because you enjoy it. And you like being around people, helping people achieve their goals, et cetera, et cetera. But you don't realize that actually people think about, I know it sounds weird, but people think about you when they're studying, or they're like, oh, I need to do that thing for Ollie. Or it's weird, but you have a bigger impact than you think, I think.
Yeah. And I think you can't always know what someone is going to take away from what you say. Like, you might think you do, but actually, people hear what they're ready to hear, and they hear what's really going to maybe help them. So sometimes you really don't know how you might impact someone by something that you say.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. That's been fascinating. Thank you so much, Ollie. I've really, really enjoyed that. And I'm sure everybody listening has really enjoyed getting to know you. So let people know again where they can find you on Instagram, and also a little bit about if they want to do anything about pronunciation with you, how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah, so the best way is to come and find me on Instagram. Okay. At ESL Cosmos, and just send me a DM. I'm running like a challenge later in the month, which is going to be, I'm not going to give away too much information right now, but hopefully quite fun, and to do with building pronunciation confidence and fluency confidence. So yeah, if you want to get involved in that, you can come and find me on Instagram.
Perfect.
And I also do, at the moment, I work one-on-one with students. I currently don't have any one-on-one, but I'm opening some groups soon. Yes,
so like group fluency pronunciation classes.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. So working on sounding clearer when you speak, so you can be understood for whatever you need your English for, whether that's speaking internationally or whether you live in an English speaking country or whatever it is. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, make sure that you check Ollie out. I'll leave Ollie's details, his link to his Instagram, in the description for the podcast episode. I'll also share on my Instagram as well. Ollie, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been, yeah, really enjoyable.
Thank you. Bye.
Talking and yeah.
Good. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, that's a wrap for today, folks. It was fantastic having Ollie on the show, and I really actually enjoyed especially the part talking about living in another culture and also his thoughts being a teacher and being especially somebody that specializes pronunciation. What are some of the challenges for his students? So make sure that you check him out. I'm going to leave all the links in the description of the episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you like my program, my podcast, my show, whatever you want to call it, hit the subscribe button. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iVoox, amongst others. You can now do it on Google Podcasts as well. Also, don't forget to come and find me on Instagram. I have actually just changed my name recently just to simplify it a little bit and get rid of those horrible underscores. So you can now find me at Anna2NS English or Anna2Ns English. I've simplified it to make it easier for you guys. Come and find me on Instagram. I post loads of other content, not only stuff from the podcast, loads of tips, tricks, and advice about how you can improve your English. So don't miss it. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back for another episode very, very soon. Bye-bye.